Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. On Saturday, Iowa lawmakers ended the 2019 legislative session. So this hour, we want to look back at highlights of the bills that made it and those that didn't. Some of them have been signed into law. Others are waiting the governor's signature. Joining us to talk about the entire session, a group of journalists who've been following the lawmakers every step of the way this session and have, I'm assuming, a bit of leftover sleep deprivation to prove it. Kay Henderson is with us of Radio Iowa, where she's news director. Barbara Rodriguez of the Des Moines Register, State House politics reporter there. James Lynch of the Gazette, politics and government reporter for the Gazette. And IPR's Katarina Sestarek, our own state government reporter. Barbara, Katarina, James, Kay, welcome to our little round table to look back at the 2019 session.
Thank you, Ben.
Thank you.
I want to reach out to our listeners this hour. Give us your thoughts on, as you hear, perhaps you've been following it, on what made it through the Iowa legislature, what failed. What are you happy about? What are you unhappy about? What questions do you have about bills in the future? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. You can also email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Let's talk about a few of the things that happened within the last, in the final flurry of this session. Kay Henderson, would you start us off? Would that be sort of the squaring away the budget, right?
They squared away the budget. It was interesting in that spending issues were not controversial at all this year, in great respect. But what they added at the very end in the House, and then the Senate ratified it, was this change to the Judicial Nominating Commission. Was one of the big issues that was resolved over the weekend. It's been widely reported, and your listeners have probably already heard, that the governor will appoint one more member of the commission that chooses Supreme Court nominees and nominees for the Iowa Court of Appeals. The part that I found interesting is that it largely kept intact these district nominating commissions, but it changed the process whereby you can qualify to run and be elected by your fellow lawyers. They currently must obtain 50 petition signatures from fellow lawyers to run. That's been reduced to 10 signatures. Mm-hmm. Anyone can sign a petition. The idea and the argument that Republican lawmakers had been making that attorneys from rural Iowa's find it very difficult to meet those petition requirements.
And I think the most interesting aspect, too, is that this was a much more expansive proposal at the start of session, and it sort of hung over the session, and there was a lot of questions about whether it was going to get through it. It initially had a plan that would have, you know, included lawmakers having more of a role on this Judicial Nominating Commission, and in the end, it was really one of the final, you know, provisions that was approved within the last few hours of the session. And so it showcases that, you know, some of the maybe more moderate Republicans in the legislature weren't ready for a more expansive proposal.
This is Kay again. Speaking of more moderate Republicans, on Tuesday of last week, Andy McKean, a representative from Anamosa, left the Republican Party and became a Democrat. And given his speech on Saturday, we now know that this was a major issue for
him. Right. And this made national news. All the major news outlets around the country talked about Representative Andy McKean leaving the party, joining the Democrats, out of, as you said, the frustration with the president, also with the party, he said, shifting too far to the right. James Lynch, your thoughts on this. Did this have any real effect there? I mean, the Republicans still have a 53-47 majority in the House, right?
Right, Ben. So, I mean, in that sense, it doesn't affect the outcome of any legislation. Republicans can still move their agenda forward. I think it did sort of, I mean, it was a shot of adrenaline for Democrats to pick up another member. Minority Leader Todd Pritchard from Charles City told us that he didn't know when he came to the Capitol Tuesday morning that he was going to have a a new member in his caucus. So it was a surprise to him, and it's, you know, just gives them a little more enthusiasm in the final days of the session. Whether this has any lasting impact remains to be seen. We don't get any indication that there are other Republicans about to jump across the aisle, but certainly it might give some people pause, some party leaders pause, that you know, this, they have to be aware of this, that mm-hmm. not everyone is happy with the direction the party is going and how far it's going.
Do any of you know if this came out of just out of the blue, had no idea that Andy McKean was thinking of doing this, or were there indications?
Well, if you followed the way he was voting during the session, that was sort of an indication that he wasn't towing the party line. And a colleague tried to interview him the Friday before he made the announcement, was asking him about some Republican Party positions, and he said, why don't you let me think about that and get back to me next week, which at the time didn't seem significant, but in retrospect, apparently it was on Representative McKean's mind.
Mm-hmm. And this is Barbara speaking. I also just want to add that, you know, if you look at the numbers, Republicans had, I believe it was 59 at the end of session or after, you know, going into the election. And obviously there was the dynamics of some retirements, but with 53, it's a smaller majority. And I think it played a role on a wide range of pieces of legislation this session. You know, there was some conversation of expanding some gun legislation, maybe school choice, a much more expansive elections bill. There was just so many things that either were, you know, not going to advance or were completely watered down. And I think it played a big role with the small majority that Republicans have in the House.
And the judicial nominating bill might be the most obvious or high profile of those, but whether you want to call it the sunshine tax or the grid equity fee was another one where Republicans, although they had the majority and they were strongly in support of that, didn't have 51 votes to push that through. And there were a couple other issues like that, as Barbara mentioned, they had to keep scaling back proposals to get to that 51st vote. And I think it's going to be interesting looking ahead to next year, whether they bring those up and whether they have the support next year to pass things like the grid equity fee and some of their other priorities.
Oh, and I was just going to say that, you know, next year, the dynamics of the second year of a General Assembly is you're looking ahead to the elections. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to weigh heavily on some lawmakers in some of those more swing districts.
Barbara Rodriguez with us of the Des Moines Register, James Lynch of the Gazette, Kay Henderson of Radio Iowa, Katarina Sestarik of Iowa Public Radio, looking at the 2019 Iowa legislative session. It completed, it closed on Saturday, and a week beforehand. Katarina, a week beforehand, what had the get up and go, the hurry up sense here? We had another week, we thought, and then things closed up.
Right. They ended essentially a week early. The scheduled end of the session was May 3rd. I think it's still not really clear why that happened. I think some farmers wanted to go home and plant, and some people were maybe just sick of being in Des Moines. But I don't know if anyone else here has any insight into why that ending was rushed there. But.
Well, I think leaders wanted to get done ahead of time. It always plays better sort of in public to finish ahead of time than rather go overtime. And they have a history of going overtime, so to speak, although there's no hard deadline for them to
right.
end the session.
We've had recent sessions go into June even, haven't we? Mm-hmm.
To the end of June.
To the end of June. Mm-hmm. Oh, no. Let's talk a little bit about what happened also last week. This bill limiting the powers of the state's attorney general, in this case Tom Miller, developed late in the session as an amendment to a budget bill. What is some background on that, Katarina?
Right. So some Republicans expressed frustration with Tom Miller's joining multi-state lawsuits against Trump administration policies. And so they took a step to limit his authority to join those out-of-state lawsuits or to pursue them on his own. Now it would require the governor's approval, the executive council's approval, which includes the governor, or the approval of the legislature for him to join these lawsuits. And Democrats are saying that this is a power grab and it's going too far and it'll limit Miller's ability to do the job that he was elected to do. And again, this was something that was added to a budget bill in the last week of the session.
And I think I just want to note, too, that Governor Kim Reynolds now has to decide whether this provision is going to move forward. And there's talk of potential litigation. Does this challenge the powers of the Attorney General? There are Republicans who noted that maybe the language in the state constitution isn't very clear about what the AG's responsibilities are. And so, you know, Tom Miller has noted that no state, according to him, has put these kind of restrictions on an attorney general. There's some there's maybe something in Wisconsin that is also tangled in litigation. So this could get messy, essentially.
And we have to mention here, Tom Miller, the longest serving attorney general, state attorney general in the United States, right? And last week after this came about, he what is the status right now? He is not seeking re-election. He's put that into question for his 11th term.
He said actually in June of last year that the race that he was running in 2018 would be his last and he would not seek re-election. On Friday, during an appearance on Iowa Public Television's Iowa Press, he was asked about that by the person you're listening to right now.
And he said, Kay
and
Henderson.
He said, and he said that it indeed was his plan not to seek re-election. He indicated he doesn't have a successor in mind, but of course always holds open the idea that he can change his mind.
Ben, I think it's interesting, too, that we've seen similar moves in other states, as Barbara alluded to, in Wisconsin and North Carolina, where when there's been a change in, like, the governor's office, Republicans have tried to change the law to limit the powers of those Democrats. And I think we're probably setting up a legal challenge here where certainly the attorney general or someone on his behalf could file lawsuit to challenge this. I think it, you know, to sort of the whole question of separation of powers. Can the legislature tell the executive branch or the attorney general what to do? And I expect to see this end up in court if the governor doesn't veto it, which I don't know. I would kind of doubt she will.
You know, press asked her about this last week, and she just did not give a clear answer. She said she was reviewing the proposal, and so she hasn't been very clear about what she's going to do.
Okay, Barbara Rodriguez of the Des Moines Register, James Lynch of the Gazette, Kay Henderson of Radio Iowa, Katarina Sestarik of Iowa Public Radio, chewing over the most recent things that have happened at the Iowa legislature. The session closed on Saturday, and so we're reviewing that, and also we'll look forward to the coming session in 2020 toward the end of the program. Join our conversation with your thoughts about the bills that were passed or not. Did some of those make you happy, unhappy? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. I know, Kay, at the beginning you said that the budget went as expected, so we have a roughly a $7.6 billion spending plan for the budget year beginning July 1st. Budget increases $150 million for more private insurance companies to run the Medicaid program. I wonder if anybody can talk to that, because Medicaid has been under fire since it's been the management of which has been privatized.
This is Katarina. So that $150 million was actually money from that was still needed from last year. They underbudgeted last year because they didn't know yet what the contracts were going to be with the private insurance companies that manage the state's Medicaid program. And so when those companies were given a bigger raise, lawmakers had to come back and approve a large amount of additional money for those companies. And so I think after that, Republicans were saying, you know, this increase represents the state sort of having experience with privatized Medicaid management and figuring out how much this really costs the state. And they're hoping that even though these having to come back and put more money into the Medicaid program is something that happened before privatization, this was an this number was not normal. It was a lot bigger than usual, and they're saying that they probably won't have to do that again. But now with the departure of United Healthcare, one of the managed care companies, Democrats are saying, well, we don't really know what will happen with the contracts in the future, because now the remaining companies could sort of, they have a lot of leverage in negotiations.
And I just want to add, too, that this remains fuel for Democrats to sort of highlight what they view as inadequate response to concerns about how the privatized Medicaid program is running. And so, you know, there were some attempts through some various budget discussions and other policy bills to kind of try to introduce maybe language to have Republicans address some of the things with Medicaid, but it really wasn't the big issue of the session, although some Democrats tried to say that they were leaving the session without truly addressing some of these problems. And so, you know, that's just the reality of how lawmakers have just not coalesced around what to do.
Mm-hmm. There was an amendment to the Health and Human Services budget restricting education, sex ed funding, and blocking some Medicaid coverage for sex reassignment surgery. This is a last-minute thing, controversial as well. Kay, did you follow that?
I did. It was easily approved by Republicans who hold a very firm majority in the Senate, and the narrower Republican majority in the House also ratified it as well.
Mm-hmm. I want to note that with the Planned Parenthood provision, it was a standalone bill initially earlier in the session, but it did not get through the so-called funnel deadline. And so in some ways, you know, we had seen the language, but it was very much revived in the 11th hour.
Barbara, can you explain, you mentioned the Planned Parenthood aspect here. Explain what that part was.
So essentially, there's language in the Health and Human Services budget that would effectively prohibit Planned Parenthood of the Heartland from being eligible for these two federal grants that are used for sex education programming. So that's essentially what that provision does.
Okay, let's go to our phone lines, 1-866-780-9100, talking about the 2019 Iowa legislative session, now in the past as of Saturday. Matt is joining us from Coralville. Welcome to the program, Matt. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, what is your observation or your concern?
Well, it's about this amendment that was added at the last minute preventing public funds from going to gender reassignment surgery. I know someone, a young man, who was going to be able to have this surgery in a year from now when he turned 16, and this is going to be devastating that they would do this. His parent is employee of a public institution, and this is the government telling the doctors that this is not appropriate, and I'm just utterly disappointed that they would do something like this, especially at the last minute without public input. It's just a despicable act by the Republicans, and I wondered if there's any chance you thought that the governor might veto that part of it.
Okay, thank you, Matt in Coralville, someone affected by that amendment to the Health and Human Services budget. What can you say to Matt?
This is Katarina. The governor has the power to line item veto sections in budget bills. We don't know what's going to happen with this. As far as I know, she hasn't had immediate availability since that was put into the bill at the last minute. So I think reporters haven't really been able to ask her directly about it yet. And again, it was something that was added last minute in response to an Iowa Supreme Court ruling that struck down a ban on using Medicaid money for these surgeries. And so it's likely that this will also be challenged in court if it does get signed into law.
Ben, one of the concerns that some of the people mentioned in supporting that amendment was the cost, and there was one estimate that there's between $20 and $50 million worth of pent-up demand for sex reassignment surgeries. And so there was sort of a budget implication. I guess that was their justification for putting it in a budget bill. But, you know, whether that justifies it and whether that plays, whether the governor buys that or not, I guess we'll have to just wait and see.
And in the context of the caller, not only does this ban that's been approved apply to Medicaid funding, it also would apply to insurance policies which are purchased by cities, counties, and other government entities. It will prohibit those insurance policies from covering this procedure.
I want to note that the language is very specific on stating that, you know, a state or local government unit or tax-supported district, and that language is sort of, like Kay noted, much more encompassing than just Medicaid.
Let's squeeze in one more caller before we go to break. Dean is joining us from Mount Vernon. Hi, Dean.
Hello, Ben. Is the Medicaid appropriation and the increase there, is that Medicaid appropriation strictly for administration of the program, or is that benefits?
Okay, of course, you recognize the voice of Dean Borg there from Mount Vernon. Thanks for calling in, Dean. Who has an answer for Dean?
Well, the money goes to the it's for everything, I guess I would say. The Medicaid companies are, the Medicaid management companies are paid a per member amount. So a portion of that, most of it, I suppose, goes to their health benefits, and a portion of it goes to the administration.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about one of the priorities briefly before we go to break, a priority of Governor Reynolds, the bill that creates a children's behavioral health system. Tell us about that, Barbara.
It's the idea is that it's an expansion of, or an extension of the conversation that lawmakers had last year where they created more of an infrastructure for an adult mental health system. And so this is, again, an extension of that. It just is aimed at sort of ensuring core services are available to minors. It was a priority for the governor, and it was a priority for lawmakers in both chambers. And so there was bipartisan support on that. But there has been some conversation now about the funding aspect of it and the manner in which Republicans kind of responded to those questions, because there's not really, that financial part, which is kind of a biggie, is that, this is going to take some time, and it was more important to kind of build into that structure first and then kind of get to some of those things on funding.
Mm-hmm. A quick word, any other words on funding in 30 or 40 seconds before we go to break?
This is Katarina. I'll say a bill did pass that gives the mental health regions a little bit more flexibility in how they can spend down the money that they have in their reserves, but there still hasn't been any like big appropriation made toward the children's mental health system.
Okay, we'll take a short break and be back with Katarina Sestaric, a state government reporter for Iowa Public Radio, James Lynch of the Gazette, Kay Henderson of Radio Iowa, where she's news director there, Barbara Rodriguez, state house and politics reporter for the Des Moines Register. We have them all on board, and they've been following this 2019 legislative session day by day, and it ended this past Saturday. So we're going through what made it, what bills were signed. Perhaps some are waiting the governor's signature or not. We'd like to know what's on your mind as you digest what happened during the 2019 legislative session. Are you happy about the bills that were passed? Join us, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Back with James Lynch, Kay Henderson, Barbara Rodriguez, and Katarina Sestaric as we wrap up the 2019 Iowa legislative session. I'm Ben Kiefer, back in just a moment.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
We're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, a post-2019 Iowa legislative session edition of our program with Barbara Rodriguez of the Des Moines Register, Kay Henderson of Radio Iowa, Katarina Sestaric of IPR, and James Lynch of the Gazette, giving us their thoughts on the highlights of this 2019 legislative session. We'd like you to join our conversation. Your thoughts, your concerns, your hopes. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. MedicaidAssistance.org. Well, we want to leave time toward the end of the program to talk about the bills that didn't make it this session, which you may be anticipating coming in the 2020 session. But let's finish up with what did make it through here. Barbara, what haven't we mentioned yet that is on your highlights list of 2019, the ones that did make it?
I think one of that stood out for me is this this so-called ag-gag bill that ended up advancing. It would essentially make it illegal for someone to use deception to gain access to kind of a hog facility of some nature. It's, again, another extension where there was a bill that was signed into law previously, and it got tangled up in a lawsuit. And so this was, lawmakers were coming back this year to address it. And it's they note that it's worded in such a way that it could withstand a lawsuit. But and Governor Kim Reynolds signed it into law earlier this session, and they view that as a win toward addressing what they view as sort of bioterrorism. But critics have noted that they believe it would violate the Constitution and free speech. And so, you know, it was just interesting that Republicans all, you know, supported the measure, but it's immediately now already again tangled in a lawsuit.
Right. And so, yeah. will this time pass muster with the courts, creating a trespass charge for undercover investigators?
It really depends on who you ask. So Republican lawmakers who supported it said, we are using language from other states that, you know, their laws got challenged, but these are the things that you know, could withhold a lawsuit. And so they believe that it can, and we're going to find out all together. So
this is Kay. The betting is still on because we don't yet have a governor's decision on this piece of legislation. But the legislature, I think in kind of an interesting surprise, passed a sports betting bill. Mm-hmm. It was a bipartisan majority in both the House and the Senate. It allows the state's casinos to manage these things. And one of the critics, Sandy Salmon in the Iowa House, said this is the largest, greatest increase in gambling in the state's history, because essentially after you sign up for this smartphone app, you can sit on the couch at home and place bets on sporting events. You don't have to go to any of the state's 19 licensed casinos to do so.
And I just want to note that to me, the debate over this issue was the most interesting as a State House reporter, because there were multiple meetings, multiple subcommittees. I don't know that there was another issue this session that had as many public meetings as this issue did. And the fact that it doesn't have complete support from Republicans or from Democrats. And so it's one of the few bills that really bipartisan support is what is needed for it to advance.
And we still don't know. The governor has never really given a definitive statement in public as to whether she intends to sign this bill into law.
Bill that allows betting on professional, collegiate, international sporting events, legalizes fantasy sports contests, right? And so forth.
Well, you can engage in fantasy sports leagues right now. Mm-hmm. You just can't win any money.
I see. It's just
and the another thing too, just to make sure, because I know with time, the other piece of legislation that was approved sort of in the final hours was an expansion of the state's medical marijuana program. Mm-hmm. It would essentially remove a percentage cap or a percentage limit on this chemical that makes recreational users high, but it replaces it with a cap on a kind of a gram measurement. Essentially, it was very unclear until the very end whether lawmakers were going to be able to get around a proposal. And it, like other previous pieces of legislation on medical marijuana, it was one of the final things, and it was really unclear until the very end whether there was enough support for it. So that one was interesting to kind of watch.
And there, too, from both parties, for and against, it wasn't polarized in terms of partisanship, was it?
No. I mean, again, depending on who you ask, there are some Republicans who are for it, and there are some Republicans who are against it. Same thing with Democrats. And so I would say with sports betting and medical marijuana, they were those two kind of definitive issues that that just everyone has a different opinion about it.
In the end, the bill passed the Senate on the final afternoon on a vote of 40-7. I believe the vote in the House was something like 95-3.
Right. I mean, it's a little bit complicated because different folks had different. Medical Marijuana Advisory Board, and it had different recommendations that were different from the final version of the bill. And so there were some Republicans who voted for the bill in the House and then later on said, oh, actually, on second thought, I don't support this version of the bill. And so it was really some drama, actually. Mm-hmm. So that's, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Join our conversation as we chew over the 2019 legislative session with journalists who have been covering it every day. For the first part of this year, 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. An email from our listener, Larry, wants a comment on the legislature's efforts to limit the acquisition of public land. Who can give us a brief answer to Larry's question?
Ben, this was an issue that I think surprised a lot of us. The first subcommittee hearing on it was on a very very cold Monday morning, and the committee room was full, probably 200 people in the committee room, and I would say close to that many people waiting outside. There was so much public input on this. Nearly 99.9% opposed to the legislation, and yet it advanced in a scaled-back fashion that basically limits the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation from helping local conservation boards, cities, counties purchase land for conservation reasons. In many cases, the Natural Heritage Foundation would buy a piece of land and then turn around and sell it to, say, like a county conservation board when they could raise the funds or get grants to buy that land. And the argument for doing this was that the Natural Heritage Foundation is bidding up the price of this, in some cases, farmland, making it hard for beginning farmers to get started. Basically, there were two groups, the Farm Bureau and Iowa Cattlemen, who wanted this legislation. And like I said, the other 99.9% of people weighing in were opposed.
Mm-hmm. And I'll quickly mention another big priority for Republican lawmakers this year was to take some action on property taxes, because they had heard a lot of complaints from voters, apparently, about their property tax bills constantly going up. And so in this last week of the session, they came forth with a new plan after considering previous more expansive plans on this that they say would introduce more transparency into local property taxes. And Democrats, though, say that it could affect the state's growth, and they claim that it would hurt the state's public pension system.
And this was a huge issue for local government officials who spoke up. Some passed resolutions in their city councils. They, you know, it became a flashpoint on the discussion over local control. And it's part of the reason why some initial versions that were much more expansive did not have the support from Republicans to get it through. And so the version that did advance, Republicans will tell you that it's about transparency, but it's also, Democrats will note that it's a much more watered down version than what they initially wanted.
Barbara Rodriguez of the Des Moines Register, James Lynch of the Gazette, Kay Henderson of Radio Iowa, Katarina Sestarik of IPR, our legislative journalists, and we have about the final 10 minutes. We wanted to talk a little bit about the bills in rapid fire manner, I guess, considering we have about 10 minutes left. The bills that didn't make it through the legislature this session, but perhaps with an eye toward the next session. Kay, start us off with what you see at the top of that list, that the one that didn't make it perhaps has a hit.
Well, the one that I think could have the most far-reaching impact would be a bill that was sponsored by the president of the Iowa Senate, Charles Snyder, that would raise the age to purchase tobacco and nicotine-infused products to 21. I believe he will try to resurrect that next year, and it could be a very interesting debate.
This also, vaping also includes vaping, doesn't it?
Right.
Okay.
Nicotine-infused products, the jewels of our day.
I didn't recognize that euphemism.
All right. Yeah. And then just want to note, too, that one of the top issues this session that did not advance that was a priority for Governor Reynolds was, ensuring that restoring voting rights for felons once they complete their sentence. There was support in the House, but not in the Senate, not enough support. And I expect that to be one of the key issues going into the next session. Reynolds has indicated that she hasn't given up on that, and it remains a priority for her. And so that'll be an interesting one to watch because lawmakers are, not on the same page about what it means to complete your sentence. And so
it's the devil in the details here, right? Restitution and so forth, Barbara?
Exactly. Does completing your sentence mean paying all the fees that come with that, completing that sentence? There's some Republicans who said there's not enough conversation about the victims' rights in that. And so, it's about the details.
Mm-hmm. What's interesting, too, mm-hmm. Ben, is that a resolution calling for a constitutional amendment on victims' rights didn't advance despite those concerns. It got to subcommittee level and then never advanced beyond the subcommittee level. So I think that's going to be a real fighting issue next year. The House passed the resolution, 95-2 or something like that, and the Senate never made it to the floor of the Senate because of the concerns about those details. And so this is going to be a real fight next year for the governor to get that beyond current stage, to get it to the floor in the Senate and get it passed.
Mm-hmm. And another priority of the governor that didn't make it through this year was her bill to expand access to birth control. It would have allowed Iowans to get some forms of birth control directly from a pharmacist without going to a clinic first. And that was kind of the opposite, where the Senate supported that, but the House did not.
Yeah, thoughts on that. How did that not advance? Why did that not advance?
There's still a lot of chatter about why some pieces of legislation advanced and some didn't. One of the things that I observed in reporting about this issue is that it kind of created this situation where, groups that oppose abortion, spoke up in some of the legislative meetings about this bill and believe that there's a tie there, that this conversation over birth control is another form of abortion, and that's their belief on that. And so, that was an interesting kind of bit about this whole debate over birth control. And so remains to be seen the exact reasons for why it didn't advance.
Linda, one of our listeners in Bettendorf, emailed us with her question. What has happened with the voter rights bills? I assume she's talking about this bill to rewrite state election laws. How did that end up? Who can tell a very short narrative of that, James?
Well, that's another example of a bill that started out very expansive. I think the original bill was about 60 pages long. What was passed in the end was 28 pages, and that was much longer than some of House Republicans wanted. House Republicans started with a bill to fix a situation with mail-in absentee ballots. They sent it over to the Senate. The Senate amended it with this 60-page bill that changed the poll hours. It would ban polling places in state buildings, such as on college campuses. There were a whole lot of issues tied up in that bill. The Senate scaled it back somewhat, and then between the House and the Senate, they worked out this agreement that fixed the mail-in ballot situation. Left the polling hours unchanged.
Added some language about people who try to double up on participating in the Iowa caucuses, which was in neither bill in its original form. As many may know, the Iowa Democratic Party will be having these things called virtual caucuses in the days leading up to the Iowa caucuses on February 3rd. And so this bill sets up a penalty for people who try to participate in a virtual caucus and then go to their precinct caucus, essentially double voting for president.
Yeah, and I mean, the way that lawmakers talked about this was, in their view, codifying what the Democratic and Republican Party sort of had reached an agreement on in discussion over the rules around caucuses. So there was no real controversy.
It wasn't controversial.
Yeah, it wasn't controversial. Yeah.
I wonder if we can put in the unexpected fight category for the 2019 session the bill pushed by, Mid-American Energy, among others, that passed the Senate, didn't get a vote in the House. This would have required businesses, homeowners, farmers who install some new solar panels to pay a new monthly fee. Barbara, is that you?
Yeah, I just want to note that the reality of a two-year General Assembly, which we don't talk enough about, is just that you kind of pick up things from where you left off in the first year. So this solar bill got out of the Senate. And so when we return next year, doesn't technically need to go through the Senate again. It needs to go through the House, and unless they change it, it doesn't need to go back to the Senate. And so it kind of sets up some bills that just didn't quite get there. They're just in a position to advance more quickly next session.
And the reason it didn't advance is because, surprisingly, pork producers were a very loud voice against this. Apparently, many producers have used solar panels to reduce their power bills or completely eliminate their power bills for large-scale livestock confinements that use a lot of electricity. And so they got pushback, I think, from an area from which they did not expect.
Yeah, there were just a lot of unusual allies in this conversation with the public utilities. There was also some organized labor that was supportive of the bill. But then you have pork producers, you have environmental groups, you have the solar industry that were all against it. And they were very organized in kind of getting their message out and warning that this could have hurt their industry. And But I expect that to be a big conversation again next session.
Yeah, Barbara, that's a great point that we have these 2 years sessions here and that they have the entire summer and the fall to go through. When you have a bill like this that is more in the unfinished category rather than the defeated category, does that give time for those who were surprised by this to muster a campaign against it, for instance?
I mean, absolutely. We're entering the interim period now, and there's going to be a lot of behind-the-scenes work from both sides on not only this bill but other bills to kind of see if they can get the support. Because in the end, there were just some measures that just didn't have the votes, but in some instances, it might have just been a handful of votes. Right. And so there's definitely going to be an effort to get it across the finish line. So
4 or 5 minutes left of our conversation. What else do we need to throw into the mix to make sure we don't miss all the highlights here?
Well, it wouldn't be a legislative session without talking about traffic cameras, right? And so, once again, Republican lawmakers failed to agree on how to deal with traffic cameras. The Senate passed a full ban on the cameras. The House was considering a proposal that would regulate traffic cameras and require cities to give 60% of their traffic camera ticket revenue to the state. But that bill never made it to the House floor this session.
I think it's going to be interesting to watch that one next year, because one of the things that's likely to happen is, for example, in Cedar Rapids, the city is talking about turning their cameras back on. And some lawmakers have said that will just fuel resentment to the cameras. And so next year, there may be more support for either regulating the traffic cameras or banning them entirely. So by turning those cameras back on, cities may sort of defeat their own goals.
Well, we're on the topic of traffic. We had a legislation that would have banned cell phone use in your hands while driving, except in emergencies or, as I mentioned, in hands-free applications. It's sort of an evolution of our distracted driving laws. What happened with that? Does that have a future?
You know, I'm going to note that when reporting on that subject, I think I heard from lots of lawmakers who said, you know, I'm driving in on a Monday to the legislature after being in my district, and I can't help but look around and see that everybody is on their phone while they're driving. Right. And so I think that lawmakers have a bigger sense of urgency on wanting to address this than they did even just one or two sessions ago. So even if it didn't get the support it needed now, I can easily see it coming back next session.
We have personal stories on this program. Not too many days ago, we had a mother here who lost two daughters due to distracted driving. A man who is now in prison plowed into the back of her car. Her two teenage daughters were killed due to distracted driving, and he didn't brake 65 miles an hour into the back of her car. So, these sort of testimonials do change minds in the legislature. What else in the final minute or two we have here? What else does our panel want to get out, Kay?
Well, quickly, one of the things that Senate Majority Leader Jack Whitaker mentioned is that Republicans in the Senate intend to pursue welfare reforms. There was some discussion this year about some measures that would require work among a group of Medicare care Medicaid recipients that failed to advance, they'll be back at that next year. And they'll also be back at this idea of figuring out a way to pay for the mental health care system for adults and children and expanding services.
Mm-hmm. And one bill that we haven't mentioned, Ben, is the governor's rural empowerment or Empower Rural Iowa initiative that was approved by the legislature and will fund broadband connections across the state, and also some makes funds available for workforce housing. The first year especially targeted towards smaller communities because of the demand for housing in those communities, and it's a priority of a lot of the Chamber of Commerce sorts of groups across the state.
Okay, with that look forward, we're going to end this conversation. James Lynch, politics and government reporter for The Gazette. Kay Henderson, news director of Radio Iowa. Barbara Rodriguez, State House and politics reporter for the Des Moines Register. And our own Katarina Sestarek, state government reporter for Iowa Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us for this roundtable. We do appreciate all your intense coverage. You deserve some well-earned sleep and downtime. James, Kay, Katarina, and Barbara, thank you so much for your insights this hour.
Thank you.
Thank you.
River to River is produced by Caitlin Harrop and Emily Woodbury. Help today also from Stephanie Nobrega. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Tomorrow on our program, we'll listen back to my conversation from last year with historians Jeff Biggers and Tim Walsh. We'll discuss resistance throughout our country's history. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.